here today with Max Bergin, who graduated with a history degree from Leeds in 2025. Max is the British 800 metre champion, or he was in 2022 and 2025. Not this year, though, is that right?
No, yeah, I had to miss the championships this year, unfortunately.
Okay, if you'd have been there.
I'd have hoped to.
You're currently third on the all-time list for British athletes in the 800 metres. You are currently one of the most exciting and naturally gifted middle distance runners of the of your generation. You've smashed world, European and British records as a junior, and you've built a reputation for a fearless, aggressive front-running style. In recent years, your progress has been hampered a little bit by injury, but you did complete the Paris Olympics and you came eighth, sixth in the World Championships in 2025. And just recently, in May, in the Diamond League, you had a very eye-catching performance to beat the Olympic champion by some distance. How does that sound, Max? Is that pretty accurate summary of how things have gone and how things are looking in your career?
Yeah, definitely. Sort of a really glittering junior career and then a few years marred by injury, but now in the last few years going back in the right direction.
Yeah. I mentioned that you've built this fearless reputation for front running. So in the 800 metres, if people aren't aware, that's two laps of the track. And if you ever watch Max in a race, he does tend to go pretty hard from the off usually, and just sort of leads from the front, which is great to watch. Why do you do that? What's the thinking behind the all out from the front?
Well, I think a lot of it stems from my training setup. I don't train in a group. I train by myself for the vast majority of my sessions. So on the track, I'm used to running with open air in front. I'm used to just pushing on my own steam, not really concerning myself with, like, you know, manoeuvring or getting a draft of someone else. So when it comes time to training, to race rather, it very easily translates into front running, right? Really. And also I've historically had a lot of success with it, so there is an element of if it's not broken, don't fix it. Yeah. I mean, the only times in the last few years where I've, I suppose, dabbled with other tactics in races have been when there's been, you know, people pushing on for world record pace in front of me, at which point I wouldn't have been able to get to the front if I tried. Yeah, so okay. Yeah.
You've got kind of got no choice.
Exactly. Yeah.
Situation. So let's go back a little bit to how it all began. So do you remember a time when you weren't running? Have you always run? How did you get into it?
I remember. Back to a time when I used to be able to enjoy my summers rather than stressing about racing. Yeah. No, I got into running initially through school, like primary school cross countries. I think a lot of people have that sort of like experience. That's usually their main gateway in. So I did a few of them, and then I joined my local running club, which my granddad at the time was the head coach of. But I actually, after doing it for a few years, I stopped after that because my I just didn't have much coordination at that sort of age. You know, that 10 to 12 when you're growing so much. Yeah. I really wasn't that good at running for a few years. So I stopped for a bit. I played a bit of football. I did some rugby in the early years of upper school. Yeah. And then got back into it again when I was about 13. At which point I think my growth spurts and everything had settled down, and I did find that I did have a bit of talent for it.
Yeah, okay. Did you have any sort of early successes in that cross country? Because you hear about, like, I think Mo Farah won English schools cross country and stuff like that. Did you have any big successes?
Never to quite that extent. I won a few of the primary school, like local county, well, not a county level, sorry, borough level, yeah. Like Calderdale. But then, yeah, when it got time to the stage at which I could have run at English schools cross country and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I think the best result I had in English schools might have been like top 30, top 40.
Yeah.
Probably not even that, to be honest. I didn't have much of a knack for it, especially when it got quite competitive at like under 13 and under 15 age groups. I always give it a go, but yeah, no, that wasn't my calling.
Yeah, okay. And how did that then become your career then? If you what age did you really start to see the results?
Well, unlike on cross country, the second I tried track, it was pretty obvious I had something special. I did have success from a really early age. My first season as an under 13 on the track, I didn't lose a race. The year afterwards, I made a big jump in PBs, ran at the English schools on the track, won county championships, and it just sort of went on from there.
The 800 metres, I'm sure a lot of people have run it at school or at some point in sports day and stuff like that. I think for a lot of people, it is probably considered an endurance run when you're at school because you've got to do two laps, so you're probably doing it aerobically. For you, it's one of those weird ones, isn't it? Is it a sprint? Is it an endurance event? Like, it's kind of in between. So can you tell us a little bit about the 800 metres and what it takes?
Yeah, certainly. So it's very much an anaerobic activity. It's certainly a horrible event today, in recent years it has been changing in the way that people approach it. I suppose it used to be sort of like seen as a long sprint, but there'd be phases to it. The fast finish, the kick, would be the main thing, and races would be run oftentimes quite a lot slower. Right. Up until that point, whereas now you see more people front running, you see more people really pushing the pace on, and it's become more of a long sprint than a sit and kick of event.
Yeah. So, in terms of the training that you have to do for the 800 meters, you have quite a unique setup, like you mentioned, in that you don't train with a group, and you're coached by your dad. Ian's, is that right?
That's right, yeah.
Okay. How does that work? Do you get on? Do you bounce ideas off each other?
I'd say we get on really quite well. We certainly the last sort of 5 years or so, I would say we've been increasingly aligned in how we think about training and how we approach the sessions and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I think if I'd have been with any other coach, I think they would have long since given up on me, given all my injury problems and things we've had to work through. It has been a real challenge for both of us.
And I've heard it's a particularly grueling regime that you do. Do you live in the Halifax area, is that right?
I used to, and from Halifax, but I've just this year bought a flat in Leeds.
Oh, nice.
After living here for university as well.
Yeah.
But my dad still... He drives over from Halifax for all my track training sessions, which we do up at Leeds Beckett Track. I do most of my training with my dad observing and coaching, usually blowing a whistle, so I can get a sense for the pace.
And it
works really well. A few times in winter, I had Laura Waitman, who's an ex-athlete and now operating as a coach up there. Right. She very kindly helped me out on a few sessions getting on the bike.
Right.
But come summer, it's very much focusing on my own sessions, getting them done by myself.
Can you give us an idea of the volume of training that you're doing? What does a day of training look like for you?
Yeah, so we do something different every day. We'll probably end up doing three track sessions a week, on usually Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. I'll fit either one or two gym sessions in, Monday, Friday usually. And with a gym session, I'll pair that with either an easy run or a more like interval type run.
Yeah.
Sort of 20, 30 minutes striding the straights and jogging the bends of a track. Right. Something like that.
Yeah.
Hills historically has been a big part of our training regime. We'd usually fit them in on a Wednesday, hill reps.
Yeah.
Like 200 meter sprints up quite steep hills. Usually I go to Halifax for that.
Okay.
Haven't been able to fit as much of that in this year.
Right.
For various reasons, but I would say that's something we're looking to reintegrate into the training the training program. And then Sunday long run, keeping it nice and simple.
Nice.
Doing that, usually I run for about an hour. Okay. I don't run much more than that. I think the longest I've ever run is probably 12 miles in one go. I've never really hit high miles or high long runs.
Now in 2022, you were the fastest man in the world in 800 meters heading into world championships when you were forced to pull out the deep vein thrombosis. You ended up on a mobility scooter at the time.
I did. Well, we had one. British Athletics had one going spare because I think one of the physios had been using it.
Right.
So I was given that and I was whizzing about Eugene for a few days on that. Unfortunately, they took it back. They took it back with them when the team left, and I was stranded there on my own. So I was back on the crutches for that.
Yeah. And with those injuries that you've had over the years, how do you kind of cope with that?
Yeah, I mean, there was certainly a point where it had built up for a few years, one issue after another, and it really felt like I was never going to get anything done, really. You know, I'd run one or two races in a season and just not be able to compete. And so I would say, probably after that DVT, that winter was the hardest because I'd got back from that and then over the course of the winter developed another problem which was actually going to drag on for a few years after that. And at that point, I really felt quite low and quite despondent at my prospects. But I suppose learning to push through that and accepting that is just the kind of athlete that I am. Mm. I probably will always have some sort of issue cropping up, something to have to deal with. But knowing in myself that I can still have a great career in spite of that, you know, I got to the Olympic final having only really had a month or so of track training beforehand, and instances like that and the qualifying for World Championships the year before and stuff had really solidified my sort of confidence in the sport. There's nothing really, I don't think, that I could ever pick up that I don't know for sure I can get over and still be competitive and still have a chance at still being the best.
Yeah. The Olympic performance with that little training, I remember you were kind of pushing at the front for a good period of it, if I remember rightly.
Yeah, I was in second. I was just sort of sat behind Manuel Wagnoni, if I remember correctly, or second or third or something.
Yeah.
Got swamped with about 200 to go, and that was the sort of like end of what I could do off of that that little training. But I had run a PB in the semi-finals as well.
Yeah.
So that was a really positive experience, and in years since, I've been able to fit quite a bit more training in, and I think I've shown what I can do off of a bit more. Yeah. Still waiting for that absolutely perfect year and setup, and it may never come, but I may never need it, to be fair. I've gotten very close last year. I'm still doubtful that, you know, just plucking away as I am and dealing with the issues when they come up, that I'll still get there, I'll still make it.
So when you were at Leeds and studying history, I imagine your experience was a little bit different to a lot of our alumni, in that you were a professional athlete at the same time performing at the Olympic level. So how did you balance your training with your studies, and how did it look your time at Leeds?
Well, I would say the winter was very easy to balance. I was able to very much fit everything in, because there was no pressure of me doing ever having to do any competitive sort of like road running, cross country, indoors or anything like that.
Right.
It was more a challenge when it got towards summer, that sort of May, where competitions and exams start to intersect, and it gets a bit hard. But I mean, lucky for me, I was supported quite well with the university. I often got extensions on work when I needed to. If I needed to be away for, you know, a race in May, then luckily, you know, I'd have the next week to do whatever exams or assignments that needed doing. Mm. So I'd say, and I think history as well, given the amount of independent reading and work that needed doing outside of sort of like, you know, seminars and lectures, I think that suited itself quite well to balancing with a professional career, because the actual attendance side of things wasn't as important as the work you were doing yourself. And
yeah,
okay. So I was able to do a lot in my own time.
Yeah, and you're living in Leeds now. I guess a lot of our alumni have been running in Leeds or did running in Leeds. Do you have like a favourite route that you go on now, maybe for your long runs? Where do you tend to go?
Yeah, I do really like running up and down the Meanwood Valley Trail. Sometimes, put it in summer. In winter, it can be a bit boggy and a bit not nice to run in. You ruin your shoes doing it. But in summer, I think on a hot day, it is absolutely lovely. Just doing 5 miles out, 5 miles back on there.
Nice.
Running through the woods. As long as you don't trip up on some of the rocky bits past Meanwood Park. I really enjoy that run. Unfortunately, oftentimes I end up on the canal instead, where it's nice and flat and safe and dull.
Yeah.
Not that they, to be fair, the canal is lovely, I think, as a sort of like a one-off.
Yeah.
But for someone, and I know a lot of runners in Leeds probably feel the same way,
mm-hmm.
when you're doing it multiple times a week, the same stretch, day in, day out, it gets mind-numbing.
And in terms of what's coming up for you, Commonwealth Games are on the horizon. Are you? Will you be racing in Glasgow?
Yes. Yeah. I'm heading up there in a week's time.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very excited to be able to actually attend this time. I was named on the team for the last Commonwealth Games, but as we talked about earlier, was stuck in Eugene, could not attend. So it does feel good to be able to get to this one.
Yeah.
And I think it's a brilliant chance for me to win my first international medal, because
mm-hmm.
I'm still chasing that.
Yeah.
So I think this is a perfect opportunity for me.
Yeah, it's exciting. Is that the target then?
Definitely. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's very exciting. And I think your kind of determination and confidence is quite clear when you're asked about it.
Well, I think that's something that's developed alongside my maturity as an athlete, I suppose. I think if you'd have asked me that a few years ago, like going into the Olympics and something like that, I think I'd have been a lot more doubtful of myself. But now, knowing the background training that I've been able to get in this year, I suppose, knowing the experience I've had in races as well, and just knowing how I've developed as an athlete, I am incredibly confident, I think, going into it.
Yeah, that's great to hear. And I mentioned at the start, you are third on the all-time list at the moment, but you have been chipping away at that time, and top of the list is Sebastian Coe, and that record has stood for absolutely ages. Do you think that's within your capability?
Yeah. So going into this season, that was one of the main aims of mine, to challenge that record, to get down to it, because I felt I wasn't that far off it last season, and I thought this year, I'd have plenty of opportunity to go after it.
Yeah.
I still do think that, to be honest. I've had a bit of a disruption early season, which has sort of like maybe slowed my time progression a little bit. I'm not quite where I wanted to be at this time, but
mm-hmm.
I think all that's meant is that it's probably pushed the peak of my season mm-hmm. a month or so along the road.
Yeah.
And that actually might line up better, because there are plenty of fast time trial races towards the back end of the season after these championships, certain diamond leagues and such, which I think will be perfect opportunities to really attack this record and go after it.
I think we'll all be looking out for you in Glasgow now. Hopefully anyone who's listening or reads the feature about it, keep an eye out on your progress. But best of luck.
Thank you.
Going up to Scotland. And thanks so much for speaking to us, Matt.
No, thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Leeds Voices. It was presented, edited, produced by me, Ed Newbold. Leeds Voices is brought to you by the advancement team at the University of Leeds. You can follow us on social media at Leeds Alumni, or email us alumni@leeds.ac.uk.